Welcome back to the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast, a Fan Nation show brought to you weekly by KillerFrogs.com. I'm Brett Gibbons, and I'm once again joined by JD Andrus. JD, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining me off the bye week. How are you doing?
Hey, you know, I'm happy to be here. TCU didn't hurt me last week. We didn't play. So right now I'm doing really well. Rangers won last night. So it's a good morning so far to start the day.
Yeah. Hey, if you ever need to crutch off of that 41-3 blowout by Kansas State, you do have the Rangers in the World Series, which I imagine is a real good time there down in the Metro. I do want to start with takeaways. We are going to talk about Texas Tech this week here in week 10, but I do want to start with takeaways from the bye week. What would you like to see change, or what needs to change for TCU moving forward?
So Willis Patrick talked in his press conference yesterday, and he said that the bye week was really important to them. He said that Sonny Dykes had the entire team come over. They all bonded more as a team, and that they had their most physical practice they've had since before the season started. And I think that was something TCU needed. You've seen them play less physical. You've seen a lack of leadership around the team and how they've been cohesiveness. And I think that's really what I want to see post-bye is we still have two of the hardest games on our schedule that we've had all season. And while I don't expect TCU to win, just be competitive. I mean, getting blown out by Kansas State is one thing, but you can't let that become an every game thing. And then you're going to start losing way more fans. You're going to have fans turn on the coaching staff on the team. And it's not something that you should see happen. Basically, all I want to see post bye is I don't want to be the 2020 LSU Tigers in this bowl game. Like you can't be bowl ineligible. I mean, only one other team's done it in history, and I don't want to be the second. I just need to see the team show some fight. I mean, I'm out here defending them when my friends are all trashing how TCU's played this year. Like, give me a reason to defend you. Let me know that, hey, you still care about the season, so I should too.
Yeah, and you kind of briefly hinted at it that you have to win two of your final four to make a bowl. Easier said than done. TCU's on the road at Texas Tech. By all accounts, not an easy place to win. Then you have Texas, one of those two most difficult games on your schedule all year. And then you have Baylor, which Baylor's not playing well at all this year, but that's a rivalry. So you can't just expect to smash them. You have to play and win. And then you're at Oklahoma, probably the most difficult game on the slate all year. And you have to win two of those. So that's why I feel like this Thursday, which the game is on Thursday, folks, it feels like a gotta have it game where if you drop this one, all of a sudden you have to win two of three with Texas, Baylor, Oklahoma. Don't love the odds there. But hey, let's dive into this team. We are taking on Texas Tech here on Thursday night. TCU has won the last four meetings in this series, but Tech does lead the all-time series just barely, 32-30 and three ties. The last time that Texas Tech won, you may recall, it was a 17-14 rock fight in Fort Worth at 2018. That was actually my very first TCU football experience. And I was very surprised because I think that game had an over-under like pushing 70. It just turned into a complete defensive battle. Texas Tech has lost their last two games heading into their bye week, and TCU's lost three of their last four heading into their bye week. So this is a get-right opportunity for both opponents, and who better to beat than a rival? You see that from both sides. I do want to start with the TCU defense versus Texas Tech offense, as is customary here. Quarterback Baron Morton, he is questionable to play this week for Tech, and they're already down their starter, their preseason starter, Tyler Shuck. The injury bug has again haunted Texas Tech. It happened last year. I believe it happened even the year before with that quarterbacking room. They just cannot catch a break. Their running back, Taj Brooks, he is third in the Big 12 in rushing yards. And also a note, Texas Tech has the third most turnovers committed in the last three games. That's national. That's not just Big 12. So they need to take better care of the football. So yeah, no, they've turned the ball over 10 times in their last three games. It's not going well for them. Things did not go so well last time out for TCU's defense. They allowed nearly 350 yards on the ground to Kansas State. We all watched that game. Texas Tech system is still an air raid, but it's not like the Mike Leach air raid. Like, they're not scoring 65 points a game and throwing for 500 yards. They do have more of a 50-50 even split between the rush and the pass, especially over the last three games, because they realize that Baron Morton is not Patrick Mahomes, to put that lightly. He's not bad, but he ain't Pat Mahomes. After last week, I'd maybe expect Texas Tech to feature Brooks earlier on in this game, but I'm curious to know your thoughts on how you see this side of the battle shaking out.
So I'm really upset that Tech might be down to their third starting quarterback, which means you're going to see a lot of Taj Brooks. And the one thing TCU cannot do and hasn't been able to do is stop the run. I mean, SMU started to expose it. Iowa State exposed it. West Virginia was getting whatever they wanted whenever they came to town and played here. I mean, almost giving up 300 yards to Kansas State, and majority of it seemed like it was in the first quarter in rushing game. Like, Taj Brooks is a talented running back. I'd
Yes, he is.
Venture to say he's a top 10 running back in the country and maybe top five if you want to go there. But if the defensive line for TCU can't get any pressure, they can't disrupt anything, then I think we're looking at what could be a shootout if the TCU offense can get going. And if not, it could be a blowout again. The one bright spot I will say that the defense has is Sonny Dykes said Johnny Hodges might be playing Thursday. And if Johnny Hodges is playing, that's a great run-stopping linebacker and the heart of that defense that could be the spark they need, regardless of if they're just running Taj Brooks 35 times in the game. Johnny Hodges can make all the difference when it comes to stopping that run game. He plugs the holes well. He's going to give the defense a little bit more motivation, and they might be playing harder. But with that said, I think if Gillespie could just sell out for the run and then force Tech's, third-string quarterback to have to air the ball out, I trust our secondary a lot on an island against the receivers that I wouldn't be that worried. As long as we can sell out, stop the run game, TCU wins the game.
Sure. I am a little worried. I do have to mention, though, they do have a very tall, very good wide receiver, Jerran Bradley. He's 6'5". Josh Newton, good as he is not 6'5" or even 6'3". He doesn't have the length of a proper corner to be able to slow him down. So I do worry about the whole, if you sell too much out, yeah, of course, you do want to force Morton or whoever does step back there, a quarterback, to beat you. I like that strategy a lot, especially when you're testing those kind of backups. But I mean, there is the possibility that they do hit a home run or a couple of chunk plays because they have Jerran Bradley, who's a preseason All Big 12 selection, running loose down there. Where do you think, though, where do you see TCU having the advantage defensively, honestly, if anywhere?
Having the advantage, probably. It's tough to say because of how the defense has been playing the last few times, but I'd say potentially outside linebackers and the defensive end core. I mean, Nnamdi Obiazor is the key player for the defense so far to start the year. Paul Oyewale has been great to start the year. And if you get Johnny Hodges back, like, the linebacker core for the defense is really good. And I know the secondary has been all the talk, but the linebacking core has really been the one that stepped up when the defensive line has not been able to, and it's allowed defense to be able to thrive a little bit more, when you're running the defensive scheme that we run. I really think this weekend comes down to, is Johnny Hodges back to help this linebacker core? Because what you saw a lot against, when we played BYU, is you saw a lot more blitzes. You saw a lot more stunts that TCU hasn't shown a lot this year. And I'm wondering, maybe we get back into that and show some different looks that, you had 2 weeks to prepare for this time.
Yeah. You mentioned SMU being able to run the ball on TCU a while ago. This is just a what if, and it has nothing to do with this game, but SMU's come a long way. And that looks like a really, really nice win on the resume for TCU, which is great. Hang your hat on that. Absolutely. Right now, they might be a top 25 team nationally the way they're playing. I wonder how that game would go if it was played again this week. And I don't mean that as a slight to TCU.
Yeah.
But hold on to that win and enjoy that win, because I really do think that if you played the SMU team that's playing today, I don't think it would be a 34-17 win.
I think TCU would still win just because it was a home game, the rivalry.
Yes.
But I do think it would be like, you're looking at 42-38, a little bit closer, a lot higher scoring game.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the other side. TCU's offense versus Tech's defense. We decided to give Hoover another 43 pass attempts. I get it. You fell behind. I know. Not a great decision. I still think the run game is more successful. Kansas State's really good in the front, and it's hard to run the ball on them, but I don't know. This is 101 attempts in the past two games, JD. Like, that's way too much for a backup. And I get it. Hoover did really well against BYU, a team that actually just beat Texas Tech. Very strange game there. I just don't love the decision. He completed less than 54% of his passes, had a couple of turnover-worthy throws. He was pressured 17 times, though, by an absolutely ferocious Kansas State pass rush, and his wide receivers aren't really helping him out that much. They have 9 drops already in 2.5 games. That can happen when you change quarterbacks. The delivery's different. The timing's different. Everything's a little bit off because they've been working with Chandler Morris most of the offseason. You come in here, you have a new quarterback, you're bound to drop the ball. But it's not like we switched. No, they're both right-handed, right? We're not switching from right to left-hand, so the ball still rotates the same. You should still be able to catch the ball. I know there's a difficulty when you switch from a right-handed to a left-handed quarterback. The ball actually spins counterclockwise on a left-handed quarterback, and it really, because the college balls have the white stripes on them, that's actually really distracting for wide receivers, and they'll tend to drop more passes. But that's not the case here. That was just tangent. The offensive tackles, though, is what I'm looking for. They're going to have their hands full. Syracuse transfer Steve Linton has the third most quarterback pressures in the Big 12. And if you're a real nerd out there, which I know you are, I know I am, he also has the top pass rush win rate, which basically is a percentage of how often is he beating the blocks across from, and he's number one in the Big 12. So Linton has been a big contributor, but he's not the only one. That defensive front is filled with both veterans and transfers that are playing really well right now. And that's something I'm a little worried about. Even though TCU's offensive line has been playing well, those tackles, their hands are going to be full. Texas Tech also pretty good at limiting explosive plays. So I'm not entirely sure I want to see another week of Hoover throwing the ball 40 or more times. I really don't. That means that we're either calling really bad plays or we fell really far behind, neither of which are scenarios I'd like to see play out, especially against this pass rush. What has been your assessment of Hoover, though, through 2.5 games?
You know, the BYU game, I thought, hey, this is the guy. We found him. Like, it's Max Duggan 2.0. Chandler Morris beats him out in practice. Coaches think that Chandler Morris is the way better quarterback in practice. And then you see the game situation. There's a difference between how well you play and how well you practice. And at first I was like, you know what? Maybe we need to start questioning how these coaches pick their players in practice.
Sure.
And then last week at Kansas State, and everyone starts wanting to bash him, he played like a true quarterback, getting his second start in his career on the road in Manhattan, which is not an easy place to play at all.
No.
Like, and when you fall behind that much, like, he looked like a quarterback getting his second start. I had nothing wrong with how he played last week, considering all the intangibles and everything that happened. That was, I mean, falling behind that much and Kansas State having top two defensive front, maybe top three with Texas in the Big 12, and with how the offensive line is played, I really wasn't that upset with how he played. I think he played well considering the conditions. I think it'll be this will be a big confidence builder week for Hoover. If he can even come out and just complete 60% of his passes, throwing 32 times, I think that's enough that, hey, now you got 10 days to prepare for a Texas defense that's been outstanding.
That's a big deal. That playing on Thursday this week is a big deal.
Yes. It's basically a mini bye week before Texas comes to town for the last time in who knows how long. I really think that Hoover has the skills to be a great quarterback the rest of the season. And to touch a little bit on why the receivers are dropping the ball, if you look at the different velocities between Chandler Morris's throws and Hoover's throws, it is a big, major difference. Rather than, because Morris throws a little lofty floating ball that gets to the receivers, Hoover's throwing them as pretty much as hard as he can.
Yeah, he's got a laser.
Yeah, and I think that goes a little bit into it, is they're not used to having to catch the ball as quickly as they do. And when you're running, majority of TCU's offense is 10-yard, 12-yard routes, like, those are going to be coming at you a lot faster than Chandler Morris's were. And I think that's a little bit of getting accustomed to it, the new quarterback coming in. And hopefully this bye week, they were able to get those, hey, he got reps with the first team every day. And they're probably practicing, you know, they're probably out there throwing twice a day at the receivers. So I think we'll see Hoover be a good piece to this offense. But like you touched on, he should have been throwing the ball 40 times. He's had 2 starts.
Yeah.
And you have what I want to say is a top 2 running back in the conference and Nemani Bailey, and we're not using him. Like, I think you got to lean on him when you have a quarterback that is struggling.
Yeah. And you do mention that the receivers have to catch the ball being thrown at them a little bit harder. It does fall a little bit on Hoover as well. Like you need to take a little bit of juice off when you can. I've been a lifelong Browns fan. I watched the Baker Mayfield experience here in Cleveland. And that was my biggest issue with him was there's only one speed he throws the football and it's always way too hard. So it's really hard for his receivers to catch a slant 7 yards past the line of scrimmage when the ball is coming at you at 65 miles an hour. Like let's take a little bit off there, 20% off and still be able to complete these passes. So it does go a little bit of both ways, but I do, I really like that insight. That's not something I think I've ever heard from here. So that's why I bring you on, JD. The other thing I do want to throw out too, and just because I tend to be a pessimist when it comes to TCU football. People that have read my stuff know that I'm a little bit of a pessimist with them. But you say Max Duggan with, you know, could be came out and blew up. There was another quarterback that played plays for TCU that also had a stellar first start and then had a very, very rough outing and just kind of hasn't been the same guy since. And it reminds me a little bit of Chandler Morris, to be honest. Comes in, not much tape on him, don't know what to expect. Plays a defense. Well, Chandler Morris played a really good defense that year, and BYU's defense is by no stretch great. But, you know, comes out, lights it up, and all of a sudden people have tape and figure him out and be like, oh, okay, never mind. And so it's tough. I'm with you. Jury's definitely still out. Kansas State is phenomenal. You know, they lost on a 60-yard boot to a top 15 Missouri team, and then they lost a really tough game to an improving Oklahoma State team on the road. And all of a sudden, everybody's ready to throw them out. Then they come out and win their last two games, 82-3 by combined score. So you do have to consider, like, no, we still played a very, very tough defense. And that's a very tough assignment on the road for Josh Hoover. It's just those two starts mirror Chandler Morris's first two starts a lot, too. Going to Stillwater, tough place to play. At that time, had a good defense, and it didn't go very well. But I just in general, have you seen an overall improvement with the offense week over week? I know it's tough to gauge because both sides of the ball have just been so darn inconsistent, but just kind of the growth over the season, is it something that you have been happy with, or do you think maybe they're stagnant or going the wrong way?
I'm trying to figure out how to word this as nice as possible.
We don't have to be nice here. I'll take all the flack for you. It's fine.
Kendall Briles is not the hire.
No, he sucks.
He hasn't been the hire.
No, he sucks. Yeah.
He's been awful. You're off. I want to talk. I talked about this in the postgame show with Carson on Sunday. When your defense is giving up chunk plays after chunk plays, you have to slow down your offense and give them some time to rest. Yeah, wow. TCU has the number one fastest offense in the country. What good is it when you're running three and outs or you're running four or five plays and now you're getting burned and you're on the sideline and you've killed a minute 45 off the clock and your defense is gassed still. And now you're falling behind in a bigger hole. What TCU's one bright spot going in, like week through week, up until I want to say the Iowa State game, West Virginia game, TCU was really good between the 20s. They were really good at driving the ball. They were good at, you know, mixing up their plays and basically finding a way to get to the red zone. And then TCU couldn't score in the red zone. Now it's just TCU can't get to the red zone and they still can't score in the red zone. The defense or the offense hasn't gotten better. Imani Bailey seems to be getting less touches week after week. And then whenever they do decide to run the ball, they go with Trey Sanders. A lot of it is, and you saw a lot at the beginning of the year when TCU was finding success is we were rotating receivers constantly. And now we don't see that. Like, we're not getting fresh legs out there. I don't know what it's all about. And at this point, I've given up on Kendall Briles, and I don't think my assessment is far off from a lot of the fan sentiment on who he is. And I think this is going to be the one thing that if TCU can get blinked by Texas, which is a real possibility next week, then I don't think we'll see Kendall Briles again after the season.
You bring on somebody with as much baggage as him, he better perform, and he just hasn't. Again,
yeah,
Cleveland Browns fan. We brought on Deshaun Watson. That's not going well. It's not quite the same, but let's do a little fun experiment because I do like how you brought up that they run this. You know, you need to slow the tempo down for the sake of the defense. USF is currently number one in the country in fewest seconds per play. They are 119th in points allowed. Colorado fourth, just behind TCU. They are 116th in points allowed. Utah State, number five, they're 115th in points allowed. It is a little bit of causation. I know that's just probably mostly correlation, but when you run such a fast offense and your defense is out there all the time, especially in the secondary, you're gassed. You give up big plays. And TCU, Arkansas is the only team in the country that have given up more 20-yard plays than TCU this year.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. Slow it down a little bit. Like, I know that that's the system they brought in. You do want to run tempo, but if it's at the expense of your defense giving up 41 points, yeah, slow it down a little bit. Like, let's try to milk some clock, especially if you're against a superior opponent, which Kansas State was. You have to slow things down, play a little bit of ball control. Luckily, this is not Kansas State, Texas Tech. I think one word to sum up their season so far, because I feel like we haven't really talked about them too much, is disappointing. I think they were like the darling of the Big 12. Everyone kind of caught on. And
yeah,
you know how that goes. Everyone's a year late to the party. So they, you know, Texas Tech, incredible year last year, beat the crap out of Ole Miss in their bowl game, which is great. And then they come into this year, and it's just like, okay, no, it really wasn't it. And I know it's a lot of injury, but yeah. Okay. Let's get to winner and score prediction. If you have one, JD, who wins this game? And if you have a score prediction, let us know.
Tech wins this game. That hurts me to say. I really think, because I know that Tech's your team, kind of hurts me a little bit. Tech wins. I think the final score is going to be 31-28. It's a Thursday night game. The crowd's going to be rowdy. It's Hoover's second road game after Manhattan, and Lubbock's a different beast. Like, Manhattan's a tough road place to play, but that Lubbock crowd can rattle you like no one else can. And I really think that I think we see the team play better overall, but I still think we'll see some miscues from Hoover. Lubbock's a tough place. It's a Thursday night game. Like, I think Tech wins 31-28.
I'm with you in that Lubbock is a very difficult place to play. Those that are familiar with the Big 12, that's no surprise. Those that are listening to us that may be fans of the new Big 12 opponents, you will find out. Cincinnati, BYU, Houston, and UCF. Houston might already know, but Lubbock is a death trap. That is a difficult, difficult place to go in there. They've come very near close to upending top five Oklahoma teams year after year out there. Texas has a hard time out there. TCU's had historically a difficult time out there.
They almost upset Oregon to start the year.
Yeah, they did what a weird sequence of events that is. Losing to Wyoming. But they did have Tyler Shuck in that game, and I think that made a big difference. Now, if they had Tyler Shuck in this game, I'd be picking Texas Tech. I'm going to take TCU 28-17. I actually think this is a low scoring game. Las Vegas like to hang a 60 point over under. I am a betting man. I took under that because I do think that this is going to be a game where both teams tire themselves out. The defenses are a little bit better than we expect. And even though they run a lot of tempo, these aren't by any means potent offenses week in, week out. If anything, Texas Tech's offense has been on the decline and TCU's is inconsistent. So I still think TCU wins this game, though. I just think they're the better team. I don't think Texas Tech is playing particularly great football. And as difficult a place as Lubbock is to play, it can be turned off. You can turn the faucet off pretty early if you jump on them. It's kind of like Wisconsin. If you get in there, it's very difficult. If you let them in the game, that crowd will be relentless and it's darn near impossible to win in. But if you can turn the faucet off early and get the crowd taken out of it, then it's just you and an inferior opponent. So,
yeah.
Okay, I have four more games that I'd like us to pick from. We can give a sentence or two of reasoning here. I want to start by keeping it in the Big 12. We've a big one. And I think this actually helps TCU a lot because TCU has the extra days to prepare. Texas does not. And Texas handles Kansas State at home. Who do you see winning this game?
I wanted to be Texas, so they come in still high hopes into Fort Worth, but I think Kansas State pulls this one out.
Wow.
I mean, with how they're rolling right now, I really truly think that they take care of business.
Yeah, that's tough. Obviously they're without Quinn Ewers. I do like Malik Murphy. You know, I originally penciled in Texas, but yeah, no, I'll stick to my guns. Texas.
Yeah, okay.
if this was on the road, I would pick Kansas State. But I'm going to take Texas at home this one. If a tough one, I hope Kansas State beats them up so that TCU can get one more crack at them by the end of the year, because my goodness, when Texas is rolling, there's not a team in the country that can beat them. Okay, no. This is a fun one. I brought this one up intentionally. We have Iowa at Northwestern. Now, those of you that enjoy betting lines, this game did open with a 29.5 point over under, which was the lowest in college football history. And this game's played at neutral Wrigley Field. Who are you taking to win this one?
Iowa. Brian Ferentz is going to open up that playbook, and Iowa's going to score a touchdown on offense. And I think you're going to see Iowa blow him out, honestly. I really think Brian Ferentz, he's not returning. I'm picking Iowa, and by a lot more than, I mean, I'd venture to say, I'd take the line at Iowa -9.
Yeah, I'm with you. Iowa's the better football team here, better on in every facet of the game. That would be very funny if Brian Ferentz just decided to just run an air raid with like a backup quarterback that stinks to holy hell. But yeah, no, they're just a better team all around. Washington at USC. Big game. This one, on the other hand, by the way, has a 76.5 point over under, which is the second highest on the year for those wondering.
I think it's Washington. I mean, you looked at that USC team even after beating UCLA last week, they just look defeated. Like they realize they really don't have anything to play for anymore. Like they just don't really care as much. And Washington is still, I think Washington should be, when the college football playoff rankings release, I think they should be in the top four. I truly believe that they are that good. Michael Penix should win the Heisman. So Washington, yeah.
Yep, I'm with you. I think Washington's a better team here. The fact that USC is still ranked is beyond inexcusable, considering they narrowly escaped against Colorado, nearly escaped against a much improved Arizona team. They lose two games in a row, and then they allow 49 points to Cal in a game that they should not have won under any circumstance, and yet they're still ranked. It's Washington for me. And then the last one, big one. I love this rivalry every year, LSU at Alabama.
You ever been to an LSU and Alabama game?
I have not been to an LSU-Alabama game, no. I've been to an LSU game on Saturday night in Death Valley, but I've not had the pleasure of going against Alabama.
An LSU game in Death Valley you need to go to. It's one of the most fun games I've ever been to in my life. But with that said, I'm taking LSU. Alabama's inconsistencies, like LSU's strength is their offense. Alabama's defense is their strength. I think if I had to pick between the two, I'm picking LSU's offense. And I just don't trust, like, while LSU's defense has been awful, which is completely uncharacteristic of them, Alabama's offense is so inconsistent that I can't trust on them to even score on LSU's defense consistently. I do think LSU's offense makes a statement game this year, or this game.
I like it. I'm going to take Alabama because they're at home. I don't know. I'll go to my grave back in Nick Saban. And when I'm wrong and the wheels fall off, is what it is. I don't particularly love Jalen Milroe, but I think they'll be able to throw the ball enough down the field on LSU's non-existent defense to keep a win here at home.
What a weird sentence to say.
Right?
LSU is non-existent defense.
And, well, they have the talent. It's the scheme that sucks. They should be so much better. In this game, which is normally like a 27-19, like 21-24 game, I could see this game rising into the 30s and 40s.
Oh, yeah. It should be an amazing game to watch. But anyone who expects, you know, national championship rematch of a 9-6 is very unplugged in football right now.
All right. Well, that's our show. Thank you so much for tuning in to another Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. You can find us at killerfrogs.com, on Twitter at Killer Frogs. JD, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JDAndrus11. Twitter. I wanted to call it X.
Twitter. It's fine. We'll confuse folks. You can find me over there. I'm at Road to CFB. And be sure to continue this conversation over on Facebook. I'm sure there's a lot to say coming out of the bye week. A lot of opinions flying around there. If you did like what you heard here, please subscribe to us on your podcasting app of choice, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever you're using these days. And drop us a review. That's going to be the best way to help us grow and reach more TCU, Big 12, and college football fans as a whole. And check in next week for the next episode of the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. Not too many more of these in-season episodes left, so get at them while you can. But I'm Brett Gibbons, that's JD Andrus, and we'll catch you all next time.